Hey guys, welcome back to my podcast. It's been a hot minute, but today I wanted to do a quick overview of asthma. So I'll do an overview, then a little bit of the pathophysiology, and then the signs and symptoms, the history, the risk factors, complications, and essentially the assessments. So we'll start with the overview. So essentially, asthma is a chronic reactive airway disorder, which involves the patient having episodic reversible airway obstruction resulting from bronchospasms. They also get increased mucus secretions, and they can also get mucosal edema. So this is characterized by airway inflammation, intermittent airway obstruction, and bronchial hyperresponsiveness, involving signs and symptoms of brachial airway obstruction that may persist between acute episodes and that range from mild wheezing, coughing, chest tightness, and dyspnea to life-threatening respiratory failure. So comorbidities, when coupled with asthma, can exacerbate its course. So such comorbidities include gastroesophageal reflux disease, so GERD, chronic rhinosinusitis, smoking, obesity, obstructive sleep apnea. So a little bit of the patho, tracheal and brachial linings overreact to various stimuli, which cause these episodic smooth muscle spasms. And then they can also cause swelling that severely constrict the airway and makes it hard for the patient to get air in. Mucosal edema, thickened secretions further block the airways. And then immunoglobulin IgE antibodies attached to histamine-containing mast cells and receptors on cell membranes, which then initiate an allergic asthma attack. So when exposed to an antigen such as pollen, the IgE antibody combines with the antigen. On subsequent exposure to the antigen, the mast cells degranulate and release the mediators, which then prompt the response. The mediators cause the bronchoconstriction and edema of an asthma attack. Excretates of serum proteins and cell debris lead to mucus plug forming. And during an asthma attack, expiratory airflow decreases. They can't get air out, which also makes it hard for them to get air in. Trapping gas in the airways and causing alveolar hypoinflation. And then they can get atelectasis, which may develop in some lung regions. The increased airway resistance causes labored breathing. So asthma is classified by severity using these futures. So there's effect on normal activity, like how severe it affects our daily life of living, the frequency of the asthma attacks, the severity of the asthma attacks, the duration of the symptoms that they get over the last 2 to 4 weeks when you're doing the history, and then also the degree of airflow obstruction or peak expiratory flow when they do the respiratory testing, frequency of nighttime symptoms, and the degree to which the asthma interferes with their daily activities. The number of exacerbations per year requiring glucocorticoids, so steroids. The following questions that the patient may be asked to better assess the severity of their asthma. You can ask them, were you awakened in the middle of the night or early in the morning by your asthma symptoms? How often have you needed to use your quick relief medication to relieve shortness of breath, chest tightness, or coughing? Have you needed to seek unscheduled care by calling your practitioner, making an office visit, or making an emergency department visit because of your asthma attack? Have you been able to participate in recreational activities, school, or work as you intended, or has that been restricted by the asthma attacks? Have you had any adverse effects from your asthma medication? If you are measuring your peak flow, has it been lower than their normal that they've been measuring? And then severity can change over time for the patient, and even milder cases can become severe in an uncontrolled attack. Long-term therapy depends on whether the patient's asthma is classified as intermittent, mild persistent, moderate persistent, or severe persistent. For all patients, quick relief can be obtained with the use of a short-acting bronchodilator, 2 to 4 puffs of short-acting inhaled beta-adrenergic agonists as needed for symptoms. However, the use of a short-acting bronchodilator more than twice a week in patients with intermittent asthma, or daily, or increasingly in patients with persistent asthma, may indicate the need to initiate or increase long-term control of their asthma. So intermittent asthma, the signs and symptoms of intermittent asthma include no interference with normal activities, daytime symptoms no more than 2 days per week, nighttime symptoms no more than 2 times per month, short-acting beta-adrenergic agonists used for symptom control no more than 2 days per week, and then lung function testing results that are 80% of predicted value or higher, exacerbations requiring systemic corticosteroids are 1 or less than 1 per year. There's mild persistent asthma, and the signs and symptoms of mild persistent asthma include they might have minor interference with normal activity, daytime symptoms more than 2 days per week, but not daily, nighttime symptoms 3 to 4 times per month, short-acting beta-adrenergic agonist use for symptom control more than 2 days per week, but not more than 1 per day. Lung function greater than 80% of predicted value. And then the preferred treatment for mild persistent asthma is low dose inhaled corticosteroids, but alternative treatments may include leukotriene modifier, sustained release theophylline, or theophylline. Exacerbations requiring systemic corticosteroids occur 2 or more times per year. And then we move on to the moderate persistent asthma. The symptoms of moderate persistent asthma include some limitation to normal activities, daily daytime symptoms, at least once weekly nighttime symptoms, but not every night, short-acting beta-adrenergic agonist used for symptom control on a daily basis, lung function at 60 to 80% of predicted value. The preferred treatment for moderate persistent asthma is low or medium dosed inhaled corticosteroids combined with a long acting inhaled beta adrenergic agonist. Alternative treatments include increasing inhaled corticosteroids within the medium dose range or low or medium dose inhaled corticosteroids with a leukotriene modifier. Exacerbations requiring systemic corticosteroids occur 2 or more times per year. So for recurring exacerbations, the preferred treatment is to increase inhaled corticosteroids within the medium dose range. And then, of course, adding more agents as the symptoms persist. And then there is severe persistent asthma. The signs and symptoms of severe persistent asthma include extreme limitation to normal activities, continual daytime symptoms, frequent nighttime symptoms, they may be every night, short-acting beta-adrenergic agonist used for symptom control several times a day, and then lung function at 60% of predicted value or lower, exacerbations requiring systemic corticosteroids occur 2 or more times per year, and the preferred treatment for severe persistent asthma includes high dose inhaled corticosteroids combined with long acting inhaled beta adrenergic agonists, long term administration of corticosteroid tablets or syrup can also be prescribed by their provider. So causes of asthma could be sensitivity to specific external allergens, which then lead to the cause, or it could be internal non-allergen factors such as genetic factors and stress. So risk factors are family history, smoking or exposure to secondhand smoke, history of another allergy condition that the patient may have,
Food additives containing sulfites and any other sensitizing substance or sanitizing substance. Perennial allergens such as house dust, mold, and animal dander. There also could be feather pillows, could also be a risk factor. Seasonal allergens such as pollen from grass, trees, and weeds can be a risk factor. Exposure to pollution or occupational chemicals. Being overweight can be a risk factor. Emotional stress can be a risk factor. Infection can be a risk factor. Exercise can be a risk factor if they already have asthma, you know, genetically or by other cause, the exercise would exacerbate the asthma attacks. Certain medications such as aspirin, beta blockers, NSAIDs, and then low birth weight or a mother who smoked while she was pregnant is also a risk factor. So for the incidence is highest with chronic exposure to an allergen. Asthma is estimated to affect approximately 26 million Americans, and the disorder can occur at any age. Adult onset occurs more commonly in females than in males. Asthma prevalence among the American is higher in blacks than whites. So complications of asthma. Acute severe asthma, formerly known as status asthmaticus, can be a result. Respiratory failure can be a complication. Pneumonia can be a complication. Atelectasis can be a complication. Air leak syndrome, also known as pneumonia, can be a complication. And obviously the severe case, which would be death, would be a complication of asthma. Because once you can't exchange that air, that becomes a problem for all of your other organs that need oxygen. So history, you may look for any non-allergic asthma attack they might have had, typically precedented by severe respiratory tract infection, especially in adults. Possible aggravation of intrinsic asthma attacks from irritants, emotional stress, fatigue, endocrine changes, temperature, humidity variations, and exposure to nauseous fumes. Dramatic onset of an asthma attack with a simultaneous onset of severe multiple symptoms or insidious onset with gradually increasing respiratory distress. Exposure to a particular allergen followed by sudden onset of dyspnea, so shortness of breath, and wheezing and tightness in the chest, which can be accompanied by a cough that produces thick, clear, or yellow sputum. And then also onset of attack commonly during the night or in the early morning, and complaints of chest tightness or pain. So these are all things you can look for in their history. So physical finding, visible dyspnea, which just means you can see them having trouble breathing, so having trouble with shortness of breath. They can use their accessory respiratory muscles to try to get more air in. They might have diaphoresis, so they could be sweating from all that effort that they're doing, and also the lack of oxygen in their heart being unhappy with that. They could also have tachycardia, tachypnea, so they're hyperventilating a little bit, their breathing would increase, mild systolic hypertension, and pulsus paroxysmus, inspiratory and expiratory wheezes. They could have wheezing and a cough, which may be exercise-induced, and then prolonged expiratory phase of respiration, decreased breath sounds if you're listening to them, cyanosis, confusion, lethargy, indicating onset of life-threatening acute severe asthma or respiratory failure. So auscultate, which means listen to the lungs closely for wheezing. And then, of course, if you're the nurse caring for this patient, notifying the physician immediately if the patient who was wheezing, which means they were moving some air, now suddenly stops wheezing, which means there likely is like no airflow occurring. So this may indicate severely limited airflow and they'll need to be treated very promptly. Diagnostic tests. So they would have an ABG, which is an arterial blood gas analysis, which just gives us a picture of what's going on in their respiratory system and what we could do to fix the values that would be abnormal. They could also get radioallergy allosorbent tests, which shows increased serum of IgE levels as a result of an allergic reaction. They could get a complete blood work with a differential that shows increased eosinophil count in acute phases and an increased white blood cell count. And the differential can also help indicate any infection that could be onsetting this exacerbation. And then their total serum IgE levels may be elevated if they are having an allergic reaction that set it off. Obviously, they would have a chest X-ray taken when they're in the hospital. They could even have a CT scan, an MRI, depending on what the treatment plan is or what they're trying to look for, essentially. And then further on, once they've recovered, they could have pulmonary function tests out in the community with their physician just to see how their lung function is doing. Then they could do skin testing, which may identify specific allergens that could set off their asthma attacks. They could also do a peak flow monitoring, which would reveal a result of 50 to 79% of personal best, which indicates that their asthma might be worsening over time. And then treatment, obviously, it will be based on what type of asthma and how severe it is, how severe the reaction is, and then identifying and avoiding any precipitating factors such as allergens, exercise, or medication. And then, of course, establishing a care plan and a maintenance plan for the patient to maintain their airways and keep it open so that if they do have an exacerbation, they have a medication regimen that they can use to rescue their breathing. And then environmental control, such as pet dander, smoking, dust mites, to help to reduce the amount of time they have an exacerbation. And then, of course, fluid replacement if the patient's unable to tolerate oral intake as they are having more issues, breathing, that breathing would take precedent over them being able to eat and drink at that current time and as you are trying to control their acute situation. And then obviously they'll be ordered medications based on the type of asthma and the type of history they've had with it and how severe and how mild, and that will determine the regimen of medications that they get and how much of each medication or if they need a combination of medications. So that is my quick review of asthma. I hope you guys enjoy. I will do my best to get another episode out to you guys, but I see that there's been a little bit more activity in terms of people listening to the podcast. So I will do my best to get more quick overviews out for you guys. And then if I have time, I might do some in-depth review of some topics that I'm interested in. But otherwise, thank you for listening. Please comment, give me some feedback, and like the podcast or the episode. But otherwise, I hope to see you in the next episode. Bye now.